Do you love true crime but are looking for something different?
It sounds like a sitcom.
It does.
The Benders.
The kind of assholes you should probably leave them alone.
Do you like learning about cases so off the wall they can't possibly be true?
Her wig is enormous, but it is lifted off her head by a monkey.
Do you love history, but want to hear about what they didn't teach you in school?
It's just got a home is where you hang your horns sign.
Do you like laughing awkwardly about cases that are bizarre and a little strange?
They'd be able to wield so many knives with all of their little arms.
Then we have the podcast for you. Join me, Lindsay.
And me, Madison, for Ye Olde Crime.
Where we discuss the funny, strange, and obscure crimes of yesteryear.
Listen every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And we'll see you next time with another tale
as old as crime.
Darkcast Network, the light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
On December 21st, 2020, two little boys are playing on their back patio while their father gathered firewood. When they mysteriously disappear from their backyard, the police and the small community of California City, California, immediately start to search for 4-year-old Orin West and 3-year-old Orson West. But it quickly becomes apparent that things aren't as they seem, and the investigation takes a darker turn. But now, over 1 year later, this case is marred by suspicions, accusations, but no sign of the brothers. Just a community left asking, where are the boys? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Orin and Orson West. I'm Kona Gallagher. And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back. Welcome.
Thank you so much for joining us for season 3 of the show.
I cannot believe that we're going into our third season.
I know. It's crazy. We've done like close to 60 episodes or something like that so far.
Yeah. Well, I think it might even be more than that.
It might be. Yeah. Yeah. So quite a lot. But we're very excited to be back and to be bringing you new cases. But since it is a new season, I figure that we should reintroduce ourselves to our new listeners. So I am Kona Gallagher. I have been obsessed with true crime since I was way too young. I'm a realtor by day. You can reach me at callkona.com. And I live in Northern Virginia with this handsome gentleman sitting across from me, our 3 kids, and a dog.
And I am Ethan Flick. I have over 17 years of law enforcement experience. Though I am not going to tell anybody what agency I work for. And I got roped into this podcast in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah. And not in the middle, at the beginning.
Well, yes.
We probably thought it was the middle at that point.
Yeah, I did.
We were so young and innocent then.
Yeah.
July of 2020. What a time.
Craziness.
So we are also on Patreon, and I would like to take a quick moment to thank the lovely folks who have joined us over there during our break. Like, we were on a break and they came, like, they still came and joined us on Patreon, which was very cool. So thank you very much to Justin W, Chris H, Serena G, and Chase. If you would like to join us, whether we're on a break or not, you can do so at patreon.com/attwgpod.
And I love all the Friends reference you just made.
And Ethan is actually very happy. Oh, you know what? I'm going to take a picture of you like as we're recording this right now, because we officially have merch. Let me get my phone here. I'm like taking a picture of him. This is fine. We officially have merch, which he has been complaining to me about for like months and months and months. And then when I got the merch store set up, he started complaining that he didn't have any. But, you know, like, which is fair because we don't make it. So, like, I still had to buy it. But I did for Christmas. And he is currently wearing one of our hoodies.
Thank you for my Christmas present. I love it. It's very soft and everybody should go out and buy it.
Yes. And you can do that at tpublic.com/stores/ATTWGpod. And then we'll also have that linked in our show notes. Again, if you have designs that you would like to do and get paid for, you can actually do that through TeePublic. So just message me and I'll kind of tell you what they told me basically, and we can get that set up.
Or if anybody out there wants to make hats for our podcast.
Oh yeah, you said we don't have hats.
Yeah, TeePublic doesn't make hats. I want a hat.
Oh really?
Yeah.
They don't make hats at all?
No.
Oh.
I want a hat.
Yeah. All right. Well, if anybody's got the lowdown on hats, then that would be helpful too. So yeah, so that is where we are at. Thank you again so much. But enough about us. Let's get to this week's story about Orrin and Orson West. Orrin West was born on August 4th, 2016, and Orson West was born on June 11th, 2017. Both boys were born in Bakersfield, California, to their mother, Ryan Dean, and their father, Charles Pettis. The boys were named Sincere with a C and Classic Pettis at birth. According to Dean, she doesn't have a criminal record. She's never been in jail. However, she told KGET and NBC affiliate that in 2018, she came home from work and noticed that her baby was crying in a way that didn't seem right. And this was Orrin, the older one. She took him to the hospital where it was found that his femur bone was broken and twisted.
How old?
So this was sometime in 2018. He was born in August of 2016. So, I mean, year and a half.
So are we thinking like a crib accident? Like maybe his foot got stuck in the crib somehow and
I do not know. She didn't elaborate, only to say that it had nothing to do with her. But the two boys were placed into the foster care system and Trizelle and Jacqueline West became their foster parents. A big part of this story is around the California foster system, which obviously you and I do not have experience with. And they do, there are some similarities regardless of what state you're in, but certain specific rules obviously do vary from state to state. So I don't know why or how this happened so quickly, because my experience with the foster system, like in Virginia, is reunification with the family is always the goal. And they generally try to do that as much as possible before kind of changing the status, I guess, of the kids from foster to adoptive.
Right. That's the same in Pennsylvania as well.
Right. But for whatever reason in California, or at least in this case specifically, that process was very quick. And Ryan Dean, their mother, very quickly lost her parental rights.
Hmm.
The last time Ryan saw her children in person was late 2018. I don't know when in 2018 the hospitalization was, but just months after that, she never saw her children again.
Yeah, that's really quick. And again, just to clarify, we're not talking about removing a child from an unsafe home. We're talking about putting them into the system, like actual foster care on the way to adoption.
Yeah.
Which is, that's pretty far in the system.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm sure, you know, at first it was just like an emergency kind of taking them out of an unsafe place, right? Due to those injuries and the hospitalization. But yeah, the whole thing just seemingly from, you know, just what I was reading, just moved incredibly quickly.
Yeah. And again, I'm same boat as you. Yeah. I don't know much about the CYS system in California. But that seems very fast.
Right.
And I'm wondering what if any steps were taken for reunification. Was she offered any services in the home?
Parenting classes, isn't yes. that usually a part
yeah,
of it?
Right, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. So they were placed with this foster family, the Wests. And they also lived in Bakersfield, and they already had four children, two adopted and two biological. By 2019, so just the next year, Ryan Dean's parental rights were terminated by the state of California. And apparently the boy's father voluntarily gave up his parental rights.
Wow.
So because of that, that kind of cleared the way for adoption.
Yeah, sure.
And the Wests officially adopted the boys and renamed them Orrin and Orson West. The new additions expanded their family to a total of 6 children. Now, for privacy reasons, the ages of the other children haven't been confirmed. Basically, you know, police, authorities, everybody, like, they're just trying to keep these other children out of the public eye as much as possible.
Yeah, makes sense.
As you can imagine. Yeah. But they have said that the 4 other children were all older than Orrin and Orson. I've read that the oldest one was 10 when all this was happening, like in 2020, but that has not been confirmed. When Orrin and Orson West came to live with them, the family lived in the Casa Loma apartments in Bakersfield, but it had to have been very cramped. I don't know which unit they were in, but the largest one is a 4-bedroom that's about 1,300 square feet.
Wow. I thought we were on top of each other at our last house.
I know. And we only had 3 kids, not 6. So yeah, I mean, pretty small for a family of 8.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess they made it work because they all lived there for about a year or so until they were actually able to buy a home of their own. Like many people who were trapped inside their homes with small children during the initial COVID outbreak of 2020, the Wests began looking for more space. They found it in a single-family home in California City, a small town about 65 miles southeast of Bakersfield. There, they were able to find a 3-bedroom ranch-style home with a huge fenced-in backyard. Now, this home was still relatively small for such a large family. At nearly 1,800 square feet and with their own outdoor space, it was a step up from the apartment, for sure.
Yeah.
The West family moved in September of 2020. With being new to the neighborhood and with COVID restrictions still in effect, it doesn't sound like the West really got to know their neighbors, which is nuts. I mean, we really also haven't gotten to know our neighbors, yeah. And we've lived here for just over a year. Those neighbors who were interviewed later said that they had never seen any of the West family's 6 children. Cal City Police Chief John Walker later clarified that investigators eventually did find neighbors who had seen the children, but it's unclear if those neighbors had seen some of the children or all 6 of them. This police chief, Chief Walker, he, during the initial phase of this investigation, he was obviously on the news a lot. And at one point, he did go on the news and tell reporters that no neighbors have ever seen any children. And at that point, that was true based on the information he had. But he has been clarifying over the past year that no, they later did find neighbors who had seen the children.
I don't find that to be particularly disturbing given the time.
Exactly.
Again, pandemic hit, you know, I mean, even our kids did distance learning for mm-hmm. an entire year or so. They barely left the house.
Yeah.
You know, so that, I mean, it's understand. And I mean, look, everybody else was preoccupied doing their own thing,
yeah.
Either working from home or trying to figure out how to make everything work. So that to me, that doesn't seem odd to me, given that it was in the middle of a pandemic.
Well, exactly. And that's why, again, with them just moving there in September of 2020
right.
and all of this happening in December, it's not weird to me like that the neighbors didn't know
yeah.
them, like any of
right.
that. Like, to me, that tracks with the situation that we were all in.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is a residential neighborhood that they live in, but the West home is somewhat isolated in that they don't have any direct next door neighbors. The lots directly to the left and the right of the home are empty. If you're facing their house, it looks as though, and this is kind of just based on like Google Earth and images that I found. If you're facing the home, it looks as though there are 2 empty lots to the left and then a neighbor and 3 empty lots to the right and then a house on the corner.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Look, I love our house, but I would love to not have neighbors on either side of us.
Well, but it's interesting that you do mention our house, because their backyard, it's actually set up exactly like ours, where their back fence line is the back, so fence, line
back fence line
of the other houses.
Yeah.
So they do have a house that they share a back fence with.
Interesting.
So yeah, so while they don't have anybody on the sides, they do have somebody directly behind them. According to Trizelle and Jacqueline West, on the evening of December 21st, 2020, at around 5 p.m., Trizelle decided to go out to these lots surrounding the home and pick up firewood. Jacqueline was apparently wrapping presents, so they told the boys to go out back and play. Now, in an interview given on December 23rd, they say that they told the boys to go outside and play with chalk. I, and most people, took this to mean that they were playing with sidewalk chalk on the back patio, because they do have like just like a little cement patio mm-hmm. out there. But I read in a recent article that their family dog was named Chalk.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's very confusing. I don't know, because there's only one article that I read that in. So that's a little unclear, but a lot of people have been asking after this happened, was like, well, where were the drawings? If they were outside playing with chalk, like, where were the drawings on the patio?
Oh, okay.
And yeah, the dog might be named Chalk.
Gotcha.
So there's that.
Either way, the kids went outside to play.
Yeah, that's what they told reporters on December 23rd. And police, obviously. So according to the Wests, Jacqueline is inside. Trizelle is going back and forth, like in and out of their back gate in their yard.
Mm-hmm.
And one time when he comes back in, he realizes that the boys aren't on the patio any longer. Now, he, of course, assumes that they got bored or cold or whatever and went back inside. And I should mention at this point that the sun set that evening around 4:45, so it was dark by this time. The temperature was around 50 degrees Fahrenheit, but it was rapidly dropping to an overnight low of about 30.
You said he was coming in and out of the back gate.
Yes.
So presumably if there is a shared fence line with the back neighbor.
I'm sorry. It's actually more of a side gate, but it's toward the back of the yard.
Okay.
So it's kind of like in the back. If you're
it's like in the corner.
It's like in the back right corner. If your back is to the house and you're facing the yard.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's toward the back. So the point is, it's like he's kind of diagonally away from the children.
Gotcha.
Trizelle goes inside to look for Orin and Orson, but they're not there. Jacqueline says she hasn't seen them. They search the house, but find no trace of the boys. It's then that Trizelle says that he realized he had left the back gate open. He said that he went back outside and started looking for the children. He went to the front of the house where his van was parked and got in and drove around, but when he still didn't see them, he returned home and called the police. That call was made at around 5:45, and police arrived approximately 10 minutes later.
It's a good response time.
Yeah. The first police car pulled up and they immediately started searching outside. A second patrol car joined them and they searched inside the house as well as the backyard. Eventually, neighbors came out to join the search once they kind of realized what was happening.
Yeah.
And when the boys weren't located, the search expanded. Police immediately, like that night, brought in canines and a helicopter that not only had a searchlight, but what Chief Walker called an FLIR, which is a scope that detects body heat. Even though this was a residential neighborhood, as I mentioned, they are actually really close to the Mojave Desert. So it was very important that they search the surrounding area really well, because there's a lot of space.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of places that you would not want children to be.
Right, for sure.
According to a neighbor, searchers were out until about 1:30 a.m., desperately trying to find the brothers, but they picked up no trace of them. Well, all right, almost no trace of them. According to Cal City Police, the canines did hit on Orin and Orson's scent inside of the home, but not outside.
I mean, that makes sense. Their scent would be all over the house.
Well, exactly, but not at all outside, not on the back patio or anywhere like that.
Mm.
Now, what happens in this investigation beginning on December 22nd is very different from what we've seen in similar cases that we've covered. I'm not sure if this is because police thought that this disappearance and the West story was suspicious right off the bat, or maybe because they're not the boys' biological parents, or like maybe because of race. And it honestly might be a little bit of all three. But police almost immediately began to treat this as a criminal investigation, with Chief Walker saying that he suspected foul play. The search resumed around 9 a.m. on Tuesday, December 22nd. That afternoon, Cal City Police took the Wests into the station for further questioning. They also obtained a search warrant and searched the family's home, removing several bags of evidence. They also impounded the family's van for testing. Now, Cal City is a small town with a population of only about 12,000 people, and their police department has 13 officers.
Wow.
Yeah. Very, very tiny. And so they immediately called the FBI in for assistance.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Did the FBI respond?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
No, the FBI joined this very quickly. Now, you may have noticed that there are some other people who have seemingly been left out of the story so far. The West's four other children.
Sure, but they're minors.
Right, but my first thought when I read about the circumstances of Orrin and Orson's disappearance was, why were they the only ones outside? What did the other kids see? Well, the answer to the second question is nothing, because they weren't there.
Where were they?
Now, this information didn't come out until later, but the other four children were with their grandmother, Trizelle's mother, Wanda West, in Bakersfield.
Visiting or?
Visiting.
Okay.
All right. But before we kind of talk more about those children, I want to play you a few videos. These were both taken outside of the West home on December 23rd. The first video is Trizelle and Jacqueline. I'm going to play the audio for our listeners, but you can find both videos embedded on our website.
It was cold. I was going to make a fire. There's a lot of wood in this area right here next to our house. I open up the back gate. I'm throwing wood, bringing it inside the house. My wife's inside. She was actually wrapping gifts, so we thought it was a good idea that our youngest two go outside and play with chalk on the back patio. Do not let them go on the dirt in the backyard. And keep them close. So I was playing with chalk. And I came in the house. I saw them there. I went in the house. I came back out. I didn't see them now. I immediately went back in, asked my wife, did you see the boys? She said, no, they should be outside playing with chalk. I said, well, I didn't see them, so I came back outside and I started searching my backyard. I searched the whole thing. I realized that I left the gate open and I panicked, came inside the house, searched the house, me and my wife. Once that hadn't panned out, I got in the van. I looked down the street, both directions. It was getting dark, getting cold, and I got in the van and I hit a bunch of corners. I went down this street. I turned my light on. I searched. I called their names. Talked to a gentleman on the street on the other side over there. He didn't see me. So then I came home and I told my wife, we need to call the cops. It's getting dark and I need help. We got to get going. So I called the cops. Cops came. First thing they did was tell us to stay in the house so they can get a hold of us. And they had us just sitting there, and we wanted to keep searching. But everybody came out in droves, and I wanted to thank you guys that night, but we couldn't go outside.
All right, before we get into the second video, I want to get your thoughts on that. And again, before that, we just played a short excerpt of the video for you guys, but the full 2-minute 20 video is on our website.
So he said that he was chopping firewood. He came into the backyard, saw the kids on the patio,
mm-hmm.
then went inside. Then when he came back outside is when the kids were missing.
That is what it sounds like. It was a little confusing to me, like what he was saying. It sounds like he was saying like he was kind of going back and forth inside of the house.
Yeah.
And like one time he went in, they were there, like he came back out, he went back in. I don't know, but yeah.
So, but the official statement, to the best of your knowledge, mm-hmm. is that he came in back into the backyard and they were already gone. Or
yes,
is that not?
I think so. But okay. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it is a little confusing.
I mean, I noticed that discrepancy right away, but
yeah,
that just like you said, I mean, he's giving an interview, saying things quickly, so maybe
he got a little mixed up. He was, I mean, he seems a little bit flustered,
yeah, you know? To say the least.
Yeah.
So I also, I'm assuming you want me to talk about the police telling them to stay put, stay in the house.
Yeah, I mean, because we do talk about that a little bit. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
It kind of makes sense. I mean, I mean, what happens if they're out searching and the boys are either in the house somewhere that somebody missed them,
mm-hmm.
or they got missed outside during the search and right. the boys come back?
Well, exactly. And, you know, and
so that makes sense to me.
It makes sense to me too, because we've also seen that in the Mason Smith case.
Right.
So that was the other thing. Like, his parents were criticized for not joining some of the searches, and his mom was like, the police told us not to. Like, the police told us to stay for a couple different reasons. And, you know, one is exactly what you said. Another one, especially in their case, when they're searching the desert much later, is, you know, they don't want the parents to be the one to find
anything.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yes, there is that.
I mean, other than that, they look like distraught parents.
Yeah.
I'm not getting any weird vibes or anything.
Right. So that was that video. So that's his adoptive parents, the Wests. Now, the second video that I'm going to show you, and again, we'll play a clip of this for our listeners here. The full one will be on the website. This is Ryan Dean, who is Orrin and Orson's biological mother. She found out about the boys going missing from the news and drove down to Cal City from Bakersfield. And again, this is same day, December 23rd, same time.
She let my two kids out in the backyard because she didn't want them to see the gifts. But you didn't let the other kids out. Where were the other kids? Why my two just go back there? At night, she said it was dark. And it's cold right now, so I know it was cold then. So I don't believe it.
So when did she tell you this? Where were you when she told you this?
I just came here 45 minutes when nobody was here. 45 minutes to an hour, and we knocked on the door. And it took them a minute to come, and he came out. And he want to say he's sorry and all that. I just don't feel in my heart that it's something. They're not.
Do you have a relationship with these parents?
I don't know them. I don't know them. They did something. I feel like they did something, and they know something. They did something. And I feel my kids is somewhere around here. I can feel it. And I feel like they're in the house. And I feel like they did something.
Okay, so again, that was Ryan Dean, the boy's biological mother.
Well, I mean, obviously, she's a distraught mother. She seemed pretty quick to jump to start accusing them.
Very quick, yeah.
So I have some opinions about that that I'm going to hold off
okay.
on saying. That seems strange to me. So she admitted that she didn't know them
right.
until meeting them just now.
Right.
And then she immediately jumps to the conclusion that they did something mm-hmm. to the kids. Again, I'm going to hold off on my opinion on that.
Okay. Well, I wanted to play these videos just to kind of give everybody an idea of the main players in this. But let's get back to the other children. On December 19th, Trizelle and Jacqueline said that they took all of the children to Bakersfield to go Christmas shopping and that the four oldest children stayed with their grandmother. So there are several weird things about this. Their neighbor to the left has a, and this is to the left facing their house. The neighbor to the left has a security camera on the side of their home, so that security camera faces the side of the West's home.
Okay.
Now, remember, their houses are separated by two empty lots, so all of the footage is
from a distance.
Yeah, from a distance. But I did find a YouTube video of the surveillance footage from December 19th. And from what it looks like, only the parents and four children get into that van. Plus, we have a four-year-old, and getting him into his car seat takes forever. And in my opinion, it did not look like they took enough time to get two small children into car seats while trying to make sure four other children were also buckled up and ready to go. Now, according to this footage, they left and were gone for approximately 3 hours. Now, Bakersfield, the drive is about an hour. So according to this, they would have had enough time to drive to Bakersfield, stay for about an hour, and then drive back. When they returned that afternoon, only the parents got out of the van. It does not appear that they had any children with them at all. So where were Orrin and Orson on the afternoon of December 19th? Could there be things that were missing from this footage? Like, yes, absolutely. I just saw, you know, again, on YouTube, neighbors' footage from kind of far away.
Yeah, I mean, did they hire a babysitter? Did they have maybe another family member or friend that was watching the two youngest ones so that they could, you know, relatively easily get up to Bakersfield, spend a little bit of time there with grandma, and then head back?
Right, exactly. So, like, I have no idea. I mean, there could be other footage from another angle that explains everything. You know, there could be something like that. But just based on what I've seen, like, to me, it raises questions. Every time police were asked about the parents, they reiterated that they were cooperating with the investigation. Nevertheless, Child Protective Services took the Wests' other four children into their custody on December 22nd, the day after the boys disappeared. When asked why, Chief Walker told reporters, quote, "Anytime anything happens in a household where it involves any kids, all the kids are taken out of the household," end quote.
That must be a California thing.
I guess. Because, like, I get it.
Look, it definitely isn't a Pennsylvania thing. I've been involved in cases when I was a social worker where, you know, multiple kids, something happened with one kid, the rest of the kids stayed in the house, and I removed the one kid.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of the way it went.
Right.
I'm not saying it's the best way to go, so maybe it's a California thing.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's interesting to me because the kids weren't technically in the household at the time.
Right, but if they're suspecting some sort of foul play on the part of the parents,
yeah,
it would make sense to have the other kids just removed out of caution.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
but I've never heard that rule specifically.
Right,
where,
and neither have I. And it seems interesting to me that they would choose to put them in foster care as opposed to just letting them stay with the grandma or another family member.
Yeah.
And, you know, this also isn't something that we've seen in other cases, because when I was reading this, I immediately thought of our last episode, our bonus episode on Michael Vaughn, the 5-year-old who went missing this past summer from Fruitland, Idaho. He was one of four children, and he went missing under very similar circumstances. He was playing, his father went to another room to check on his little sister, and then Michael disappeared. But Michael's siblings were never taken into CPS custody. And again, like you said, I mean, that's Idaho. This is California. Right.
Different jurisdictions, different rules.
Yeah, exactly. But it definitely struck me as like a huge step to take the four kids out of the home the day after the disappearance, like less than 24 hours later.
Yeah, and maybe the police have information that they're not willing to disclose, and they're saying this blanket statement,
right,
to kind of push off them doing this, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and they're not going to reveal that to the press.
No, of course not. We are very excited to announce that this episode is sponsored by Podcorn. Podcorn is a marketplace connecting podcasters to amazing podcast sponsorship opportunities, such as host read ads, which is what this is, interview segments, topical discussions, and more. They are actually integrated with our podcasting host, and so I've been able to get on there and take a look at a lot of really cool sponsorship opportunities that might fit with our podcast. So we can really pick and choose sponsors that kind of work with us. And since, you know, a lot of my indie podcast family listens to this, I know that they would definitely be interested in learning about Podcorn if they don't already know. It's great because there's no middleman and you can be any size podcast. They have opportunities for small podcasters too. They can support the indie podcast community and help you monetize your podcast. They're here to support you and make sure that you're compensated. It's easy to use. It's easy to find the brands you want to do. Like, honestly, I have nothing but good things to say. If you are interested in seeing how they can help grow your podcast, please click the link in my show notes to sign up for Podcorn and start browsing sponsorship opportunities today. Again, thank you to Podcorn for sponsoring this episode, and let's get back to the show. On December 23rd, when the Wests were speaking to the media, we saw that clip. They also said that police had taken all of their electronics in as evidence. And that night, which was Wednesday, police returned to the home and started digging up the backyard along with the FBI. Which, again, is so fast. Like, I mean, that makes me think of the Kristen Smart case where we didn't get that for, like, you know, almost 20 years. And this is happening the very next day. It sounds as though, from the articles that I read, that they also used ground-penetrating radar in this search.
Sure, one would assume.
Yeah. But, again, police said that they did not find anything unusual. As media attention around the story grew and no clues seemingly emerged, the Cal City community got involved. They had never met the brothers, but they began leaving stuffed animals and candles outside of the family home and passing out flyers with Orrin and Orson's photos on them. But a caring community soon turned dark. Within days, Trizelle and Jacqueline had left their home and went to stay in Bakersfield. Members of Trizelle's family, people who didn't even live in California, said that they started receiving death threats within 24 hours of the boys' disappearance. One night, someone drove a truck into the West's driveway and drilled a sign onto their awning that said, "Where are the boys?" Similar signs popped up all over town and on overpasses. Someone also threw a rock through the house's front window, and people tried to break in.
Nice. I love society.
Yeah. And, like, okay, I get it in that two little boys are missing under very sketchy circumstances. But on the other hand, so I was watching the news coverage of all of this, and it gave me chills. Like, it almost seemed reminiscent of a lynch mob. And here's the quote that really got me. Laura Romero, a Cal City resident, was talking about the vandalism and the rock through the window to reporters. She said, quote, "Even though it was violent, they did have good intentions. They want to bring the parents out to talk," end quote.
That's not anybody's responsibility other than law enforcement.
I know. And you don't do that by throwing a rock through their friggin' window. No, that is not what you do when you want to talk. Like, absolutely not. And plus, the Wests were in Bakersfield. So, like, who, you're not trying to bring someone out to talk. You're trying to intimidate.
Yeah.
Around this time, police executed another search warrant and news crews caught several officers entering the home with guns drawn. 200 volunteers also gathered to search the desert around the home.
Wait, go back. Yeah. Why? What?
I have no idea, but I saw the clip on the news. Like,
they executed a search warrant in the house where they knew that nobody was home and they had their guns drawn?
I guess, you know, you never know 100% that nobody's home, but yeah, like, the Wests had been in Bakersfield. Like, they were not there. So it was really weird. Like,
it's a search warrant. It's not a high risk warrant.
Yeah, I know. They treated it like it was. Like, they had cops going around back. They had people going. I think they finally got into the house, like, through the garage. And like they, the clip that I saw was like all of these people, guns drawn, they were let in by, I think, the officers who went in through the garage. I think that's how they got in. And then they opened the front door. And then there are these cops, like, again, gun, like drawing their gun, going inside, drawing their gun, going inside, like one after the other.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was weird.
This isn't adding up.
I'm telling you, nothing about this story adds up at all.
And I'm not even going to go down the path of questioning the police tactics here. If they're doing that, they've got information that we don't.
Yeah.
That's not how you execute a search warrant on a house where the parents are quote unquote being cooperative with the investigation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. I'm telling, like, everything about this is so strange. So, you know, this is going on. We have volunteers searching the desert. And those searchers thought that they had made a significant discovery because they found a Christmas bag out there with the boy's name on it.
Oh.
Yeah, right? Like, they thought that was huge. And so they turned it over to police. But it ended up being a gift that a member of the public had left, like, on the front doorstep. Oh. Or in front of the house or something yeah. like that. So it had nothing to do with anything, really. And like I mentioned before, Cal City Police and the FBI were digging in the backyard. People saw, they said FBI agents in hazmat suits.
That's, they're not technically hazmat suits.
Yes, not technically, I'm sure, yeah. Yes.
they're to preserve evidence and cross-contamination. It's to keep basically their hair and skin follicles off of
potential evidence
for cross-contamination of DNA evidence if they find any. That's it's not hazmat. It's
they weren't looking for a meth lab.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, no, and you're right, and I get that. But the point is it was a search. You know what I mean? Like, they were going hardcore.
That's
very early on.
Yeah. Okay. So that type of reaction leads me to believe that they have information that they're not putting out there.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a year later. Have we gotten to the point where they've said that the parents are no longer suspects, or they are not suspects or anything? They just haven't said anything about that.
They have not ruled anybody out.
Yeah. So to me, how quickly they executed all of these searches, and impounding the van, mm-hmm. and everything, that to me says that
all of their phones and computers and everything,
they've got something on these guys.
Yeah.
And I hate to do that. I hate to Monday morning quarterback and go down that road, especially when you're talking about parents, whether they're foster yeah. parents, adoptive parents, biological parents, whatever. I know that they're going through their own hell, but to see that type of reaction from law enforcement so quickly, that to me says that they've got something on them.
Yeah. So while Cal City Police and the FBI are, you know, doing their thing there, Bakersfield PD, who had already been assisting with the case, because again, Cal City has 13 officers, they began to take a more active role. They started searching in Bakersfield near the Casa Loma apartments where the West family used to live.
Yeah, why not?
Well, exactly, right? Like, you know, at this point,
it's familiar territory for the parents. So
right.
And
the family still lives in Bakersfield. Right. The extended family lives yes. in Bakersfield. Also, at this point, there's not really a lot of hard evidence that Orrin and Orson were ever even in Cal City. Or if they were there at some point, there's no evidence that they were there in the days leading up to December 21st, 2020. So let's talk about that surveillance footage from the neighbor's house from the time of the disappearance. We talked earlier about the footage from December 19th when the West said they took all six children to Bakersfield, but it only appeared that four got into the van.
Right.
That same neighbor allowed a YouTuber to film a TV in his home where he was playing the surveillance footage from December 21st, the day that the boys went missing. So this is how I saw it. Now, while this footage, again, it's like a cell phone video of a television in a house.
Sure, it's going to be great quality.
Yeah. Like, it does raise questions. What I saw from this and the other clips that were released later was that between 4:12 and 4:18, Trizell was in the backyard. You can actually see his head over the fence. He's bending over by the back gate and doing something that could very well be gathering wood. Like, you can't tell because, again, there's the fence, but when he stands up, you can see his head. However, he does stay right by the back gate the entire time, so there doesn't seem to be any way in which the boys could have gotten by him unnoticed. He then goes into the house and comes out back for another few minutes. At 4:21, it's getting dark and the lights turn on in the backyard. All right, now here's the thing about this yard and the footage of it. You can actually see movement through the slats in the fence. At another point in this video, the dog goes outside and you can clearly see, like, just the movement of him running around.
Okay.
There is never any other movement that I can see in the backyard other than Trizelle. In addition to that, he told reporters on December 23rd that once he realized the boys are gone, that he searched the entire backyard, which obviously is exactly what you would do. Because again, this is a big backyard. They have a shed back there. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of space. But you don't see that on camera at all. Like, there's no search that is caught on camera. What you do see is he goes back inside, and then a little after 4:30, Trizelle comes out of his front door of the home. He stands in the front yard for a little while, just kind of stands there, and then gets into his van. And I don't know if this means anything. It's just a little weird. He enters the van through the passenger side and, like, crawls over to the driver's side and then drives away. Whatever. He drives around the block and makes some turns, which is what he said he did
right in
that clip, right? He's gone for approximately 6 minutes before returning. He then gets out of the van and calls the police. He waits in the front yard for 13 minutes until the first patrol car arrives. Jacqueline never comes out of the house, and Trizelle never searches for the boys on foot around the house. No one checks the empty lots, and like I mentioned, it doesn't even appear that the backyard was searched until police arrived. And interestingly, when police do arrive, you can, again, see the movement in the backyard when they're there. So it's really interesting because, you know, after this footage was kind of released, because the neighbor did turn all of this over to police, you know, pretty much immediately. And eventually the chief kind of made a statement about it. And he said, oh yeah, it backs up, you know, what Trizelle said, which it does to an extent, because he does, like, leave the house. He does get into his car. He drives around the block. He calls police. Police come, you know, 10, whatever minutes later.
Right.
But from what I can see on that footage, there is no search done before police come. Like, you do not see him looking in the backyard. You do not see him looking in the front yard, in the lots to the sides of the house. Like, the first places you would basically be looking if your kids were missing. And the entire time he's waiting for the police to arrive, that 10, 13 minutes, whatever it was, he's just standing in the front yard. Now, once the official search began, after that, as I mentioned earlier, the West did not join in. And we talked about why that's common and why police probably did tell them to stay home.
Right.
So the fact that the Wests weren't out searching, you know, after the official search began is not...
That's not suspicious at all.
Yeah, it's like the least weird part of this whole evening. But before we move on, it should also be noted that surveillance didn't show the boys at any point during this, nor did it show any other person entering the backyard or even being around the property at all until police arrived. The only people that are captured in this footage from that evening are Trizelle, police officers, and it does look like Jacqueline does join him once police are outside. Searches continued in both Cal City and Bakersfield into January. Dump sites were searched, drones were used, and the West stopped talking publicly.
Well, I don't necessarily think that's odd either.
Right.
I mean, especially given people throwing rocks through their windows. Basically, they were being intimidated by the public at large. So I don't have any issue with them not talking to the press.
Right. Yeah. They abandoned their home in Cal City, only coming back occasionally to pick some things up, according to Chief Walker. Their extended family created an account on Medium to release statements. One released on January 3rd, 2021. So just again, about like a week and a half after the boys disappeared, addressed why they're not joining searches. It reads in part, quote, "There have been speculation and theories as to why we, the extended family, are not physically leading the volunteer search efforts on the ground in California City and why we have avoided the press. Those theories do not reflect that in less than 24 hours of the disappearance of the boys, our extended family started receiving threats of physical violence, including death threats. Family members who live thousands of miles away have also received these same threats. We were advised appropriately to avoid public spaces and crowds given the immediacy and intensity of these threats. In fact, the boys' home has been pelted with rocks, windows have been broken, and vandals have attempted to break in. While we understand the anger and frustration felt by so many, this type of response has complicated our ability to lean in fully and has distracted from the actual search. All threats have been taken seriously by the FBI and local law enforcement," end quote.
This is another example of the nutcases that will say that they have involvement.
Right.
Like, it's people getting involved in cases that they have nothing to do with. And it's
and taking it a little too far.
Exactly. You know, and it's funny that I'm saying that because we're doing a podcast about it, but what we are doing is not hindering the investigation at all. We're not interfering in an investigation. Doing things like that takes time and energy away from law enforcement to deal with these threats.
Right. And the vandalism, too.
And
Chief Walker
yes.
says that. He's like, listen, like, if you want us to find these kids, like, stop making us have to go and figure out, you know, what's going on with rocks being thrown through windows and stuff like that.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Stop wasting our time.
Let them do their investigation.
Yeah. Now, the family also said that they had employed private investigators, but we don't ever hear from these investigators publicly like we often do in these cases. So, I don't know. Soon, with the boys still not being found, local businesses began to put up reward money, with a dispensary being the first one.
Well, it's California.
Private citizens also pledged money along with Trizelle and Jacqueline's extended family. At this point in early 2022, as we're recording this, the reward for the boys' recovery is up to $150,000, with $30,000 of that coming from the boys' extended family. Now, a different private investigator, not the one supposedly hired by the family, started offering his services for free. And he followed up on a few alleged sightings of the boys in Tehachapi, California, a town about 30 miles west of Cal City. Nothing ever came of these sightings, though, and the investigator eventually left the case. As January of 2021 turned into February, more searches were done at the Cal City home and around Bakersfield, but no trace of the two children was found. Prayer vigils were held and the reward kept on increasing. By the six-month mark, 83 people had been interviewed, 44 search warrants had been conducted on residences and electronic devices, 170 items had been seized, over 200 tips had been received, 16 mass area searches had been conducted, and 3 searches had been conducted outside of California. By the end of 2021, they had executed 4 more search warrants, interviewed 33 more people, conducted 11 more mass area searches, and 4 out-of-state searches. Two things that did not happen over the last year, though. The West family did not release any other photos of Orrin and Orson. The two we have are not incredibly recent to their disappearance. Their biological mother, Ryan Dean, released a few, but as she had not seen them since late 2018, they were basically just baby photos. Also, the description of the boys have them both at about 3 feet tall and 35 pounds. Like, and they're a year apart.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it's like they didn't even know and they were just kind of guessing. They also said that they were both wearing black sweaters and gray sweatpants at the time of their disappearance. The other thing that has not happened in the past year since these two boys have been missing is that the Wests have not regained custody of their other 4 children.
Well, that's telling.
Yeah. Of course, no information has been given public as to why this is. While a lot of suspicion has fallen on these adoptive parents, I also have to think that there's a possibility that they had nothing to do with this and have gone through the devastating loss of six children.
You know, again, I don't like to jump to the conclusion that these parents had anything to do with it, but just the way the law enforcement reacted, it really makes me think that they have something on them, and they're just either waiting, they're gathering more evidence. Maybe there isn't enough evidence to prosecute, but they're not going to release any of that, you know, until they've got a solid case.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah. And what I find disturbing is, and I kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but like, there's no actual evidence that the boys were even there on December 21st or December 20th or the 19th or any other day. I mean, right. Yes, their scent was picked up inside of the house, which would indicate that they were there at some point. But I think that if their things were in the house, the scent might have been picked up because of that.
Yeah, definitely. You know? Well, that's why I said it wasn't surprising that, you know, a canine would hit on their scent in their house.
Right. So I'm not confident that December 21st, 2020 is when the boys went missing. And obviously this is, you know, something that police have been following up with both in Cal City and Bakersfield, which is why they've been doing so many searches in Bakersfield, because obviously, you know, the kids didn't run off on their own at 3 and 4 years old and make it to Bakersfield, right?
Right.
So that's going on. You know, I also read an interview with Chief Watson where he was talking about, you know, the kids, the idea of the kids running off on their own, right? He basically said, he's like, that's the one thing I don't think happened.
I mean, yeah.
Because he said, we were out there so quickly.
Yes.
And we had canines. Again, they had like the helicopters with the lights. They had the helicopters. Yeah, exactly. Right. And yes, they're near the desert and everybody keeps like going like, oh my God, they're in the desert. They might be in the desert. But he's like, kids, like, yeah, they're fast, but they don't have endurance.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Right. They're only going to get but so far within that amount of time.
Exactly. He's like, they don't just keep on going.
Right.
Like they go and then they stop.
Yeah.
And he's like, they were not there. And so early in the investigation, that's why it was volunteers who were searching in the desert, because he was like, listen, I'm not wasting my resources by doing official searches in the desert, because like, I have no evidence saying that they're there at all. He's like, if you all want to go out there, like knock yourselves out, but we're focusing on other things right now. Because at that point, and again, I'm talking like days after the disappearance, at that point, you know, he very much seemed to be focusing on finding these boys alive, right? Yeah. Like not a body recovery kind of situation.
Right.
And not looking at the desert as like a burial spot.
Sure.
So yeah, he was like, no, I'm not doing that. You guys can do that. But we have no reason to believe that they, on December 21st, went from that house to the desert.
You said in one of the first search warrants,
mm-hmm.
or one of the first searches, I should say, that they seized all of their computers and electronics.
Yeah.
That was like the first thing that they took?
Yeah.
Or one of the first things?
Yeah. So when Trizel and Jacqueline were speaking to reporters outside of their house on December 23rd,
mm-hmm.
police had already done all of that. They had already taken their electronics. They had already taken the van.
Yeah.
I do know the phones, at least at some point, ended up with the FBI.
Once again, I'm saying they have something on these guys.
Yeah, and maybe they do, but like, and it is so interesting to me the way that Chief Walker has been talking about them too, because, you know, we did, you and I, like off mic, looked at a news story where Chief Walker was talking about the surveillance footage from the 21st, the one that I said that he had told reporters, like kind of, you know, made Trizel's story like
it corroborated his story. And like, it's weird because he's going through, he's like, oh yeah, see, like, it's like he said, he came out, he called us, he, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, this is the times all match up. So like the chief was very much like, yeah, see, he's fine. Like everything's cool. But like, if he's, I don't know what he's saying and
the actions aren't matching
right
up.
It's, yeah, there's a little bit of a disconnect there for me.
Well, you know, maybe he doesn't want to tip his hand.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's what it seems like, just in my, you know, very unqualified opinion.
Well, so you got to look at it this way. If they don't have bodies, and I don't mean to get gruesome about this, but if they don't have bodies, it's not a homicide, right?
Right.
We've talked about this before, and there's been cases where they've declared it a homicide when there's no bodies and the person is still missing. And it's very confusing to me because how does that work? I don't know. But in this case, it's still relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
So here you have a relatively new case. You don't have a body. There is probably no actual evidence of a homicide, right?
Yeah.
So maybe what
they
have...
Yeah, I mean, because they tore that house, like, upside down. I mean, if there was any evidence, like, yeah.
Right, so maybe what they have is evidence of something else, perhaps.
Right.
But it's not concrete enough to arrest or even charge or take them to trial.
Right.
And maybe they're waiting on either more evidence or further investigation. But they're not going to say any of that.
No, of course not. Yeah.
To the media, and they're going to want to keep the parents relatively calm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they took away their other kids, but, you know, they kind of want them to relax a little.
Yeah.
To slip up.
Right.
Essentially. This is all speculation, of course.
Well, of course, because we don't know. And again, you're right. I mean, this is not a cold case by any means.
No.
This is still a very active case, and it's still being investigated. The boys have been missing for just over a year now. You know, obviously all these people are still around.
Right.
You know, I will say, so again, Bakersfield Police at one point did become the lead investigative agency on this case. I think, you know, mostly because of size and resources.
Sure.
They also, in addition to searching around the apartments where they lived, I do believe that they searched the grandma's house where the other four children were staying at the time. So they've been searching everywhere that they can. The community has held vigils. The extended family has held vigils. I mean, this is a story that hasn't gotten a lot of national attention for whatever reason, but has very much been on the minds and in the hearts of these two communities. Though there haven't been many clues in this case, and these two children remain missing over a year later, Bakersfield PD, Cal City PD, and the FBI are working every angle that they can. So hopefully by getting this story out there more and kind of giving them a more national stage, we can help them answer the question that has been plaguing a community for over a year. Where are the boys? West was about 3 feet tall and 35 pounds. He is a black male with brown hair and brown eyes. He was 4 years old at the time of his disappearance. He would be five today. Orson West was about 3 feet tall and 35 pounds. He is a black male with brown hair and brown eyes. He was 3 years old at the time of his disappearance. He would be 4 years old today. Anyone who has information on the disappearance of Orin and Orson West, or people who have had any interactions with the boys at all in the year 2020, are urged to call the California City Police Department at 760-373-8606. To remain anonymous, you can call the Secret Witness Line at 661-322-4040. You can see all of the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social and Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!